ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Echo start as it crossing.
Det var skovbørn her, det fandt. Vi fik en anmeldelse af en pædagog ved halv tid.
Er det blod?
Så kan du læse krim.
Københavns politi.
Två kvinnor mördade med ett års mellanrum. Styckade och ihopsatta mitt på Öresundsbron. Ligger hon i Sverige eller Danmark?
Clips from two of the most popular Danish crime dramas, The Killing and The Bridge. In 2007, a relatively small public broadcaster, DR, or Danish Radio, began producing long-form serial dramas, usually involving a crime, a female detective, and always set in a bleak social, political, and geographic landscape. These series address issues like immigration, child sex abuse, corruption, and were always in Danish and not English. To almost everyone's surprise, these dense, dark, serious dramas found an international market. Known as Nordic Noir, they have become the standard for quality TV and are said to appeal to the thinking viewer. In this Rear Vision with me, Annabelle Quince, we ask how a tiny nation like Denmark, with a population of just 5.8 million, has been able to reshape the global television market. And if you aren't already watching or binging Nordic Noir, at the end of the program, we give you some tips on where to start. Like any cultural shift, Nordic Noir didn't just appear. It emerged from a movement known as Dogma 95, a Danish movement from the 1990s which attempted to revitalize the Danish film industry.
Yes, we have the Dogma 95 movement. It comes actually from interventions by the state, but also the Danish film schools, that they thought Denmark is not really producing high-quality film or television series. My name is Tobias Hochschaff. I'm a professor of audiovisual studies based at the University of Applied Sciences in Kiel.
And he's also the author of Beyond the Bridge, contemporary Danish television drama.
What they did, they start changing the working practices at the film school by, for example, offering something, it's a learning concept called scaffolding. It comes, in fact, from education. And absurdly, if you reduce the level of freedom you have for a certain task, you are more creative. So we have all the feeling that absolute freedom helps us to be creative. And in fact, the opposite is the case. If we have, let's say, a classroom full of kids and we say, produce something, use whatever you like, either by the end of the week or maybe next week or the week after, they don't come up with anything because the level of freedom doesn't help them to focus. So what the Danes do, actually, they reduce the level of freedom before a new production, and that really helps them to be creative within those rules they have set for themselves. Dogma in 1995 then trickled down from film and cinema to TV productions, and they have been adopted for television by Denmark's Radio by the so-called Dogmas for Television. And these dogmas are very influential for production culture more generally because they change the way that public service broadcasting in Denmark is producing serial television, most visibly in crime dramas, but also in political dramas, in family-oriented dramas, and so on. So it's not a coincidence. It was carefully planned from the early to mid-1990s all the way to the early 2000s, and it's not the outcome of two or three genius decisions. It was strategic.
What occurred in the Danish television industry during the 90s and into the 2000s, and what the Danish television industry set out to do, which was that they wanted to make television crime that spoke not only to a national audience on the public broadcaster, but that could also potentially travel.
Susan Turnbull, Senior Professor of Communication and Media at the University of Wollongong and the author of Transnational TV Crime, From the Nordic to the Outback, which is due to be released next year.
So apparently the producers all went off to America to learn how to do it, studied Law and Order and looked at NYPD Blue, and then came back with ideas about how they might proceed with Danish drama subsequent to that. And if you look at those very early Danish crime dramas like Unit 1, it looks like an American police show. It's very much in that tradition. It doesn't look like what we have come to associate with the aesthetic of Nordic noir.
It's interesting you said that they went to America because, in essence, the American TV market, it's a free market. It's not. Mm. It doesn't fit into our notion of what a public broadcaster is. So I'm wondering when they went and had a look at what they were doing in America, how they were able to bring that back into a public broadcasting organisation. It looks like a very kind of odd fit in a way.
It does, doesn't it? But they came back, and I think with a notion of what it was that they wanted to do, and then they modelled their production in terms of what would fit them. And they came up with what was called the dogmas, the 15 dogmas. And what those 15 dogmas included was the notion that it was the producer's call. So basically what they were doing was taking the idea of the American showrunner and taking it into a public service broadcasting context and saying, this is what we need. We need that central creative intelligence to guide the project.
At that time, we had the head of drama at DR, Gable, who was the head of drama, and he was very ambitious and very innovative in the way he led his team. He wanted the team also to do something different, to be quite radical in the aesthetics, in the storytelling.
Anne-Marit Wade, Associate Professor of Media and Journalism, Aarhus University in Denmark, an author of Danish television drama, Global Lessons from a Small Nation.
Gable and his team, they've been in the US and they were inspired by the way they produced TV series in the US and also the role of the showrunner. So they developed their own production model to facilitate these more innovative and aesthetic, high-quality TV drama series.
American TV was very important because some of the production rules that they were laid down for Denmark came from American productions that were using the showrunner concept, NYPD Blue and other shows. And we all know that some of the most successful American shows of the last 20 years use the showrunner concept, where one producer is the showrunner or one author, very often the author. His or her vision then transcends every phase of the production. And that's very different, for example, to many other German productions. In Germany, some people write a script, hand in the script to the public service broadcaster or the private company, then they wait for a year and a half, and then either it's bought or it's not bought, but then they're out of the loop. Whereas in Denmark, it's completely different. You give some people, usually the showrunner and a team of writers, an amount of time to develop an idea for a show, then they pitch this idea, then you ask them to develop scripts, episode scripts, and once this is done and the whole pre-production process is completed, they still and linger on, and they're actually also seen on the production floor, and they have the final creative say and say, look, this is not what we expected, or this is something that we wanted to do differently. And also in the post-production phase, when the episodes are edited, they're still part of that process, so you have more artistic vision throughout the whole production process. I think in Germany, for example, the writer's out of the loop, then the production team takes over, then the post-production team takes over, then some board meetings of the public service broadcasters take over. And in the end of the day, it's a little bit of everything, and there's no real vision. And it's also, it tends to be middle-of-the-road TV, whereas I think the Danes, it's more edgy.
The series that began this wave of Nordic noir was The Killing, which went to air in 2007.
The Killing was the breakthrough. The Killing was the series that, for many people, typified the Nordic noir look. If you think about it, the way it begins, a young woman, a white woman, being pursued through a dark forest, illuminated by lights as a plane flies over the top. And there's a thrumming music. It's the sound. It's propulsive. So you've got that crime happening. And then you switch to the family. You've got this close-knit family and their daughter is missing. And then you have the detective, the solitary female detective, shot in her apartment, dark. She's troubled. She's fixated. Will she go move with the boyfriend or not? So you've got three levels of story and interest. And that dark aesthetic, that gloom, that everything is navy blue, washed out the exteriors.
I think it was very important because the dark look comes from it, these monochromatic countryside images. And it kind of breaks away from the idea of Scandinavia as being this very cozy society with very strong social bounds and so on. And I think what is quite interesting is also the clash of what some people have labeled design porn in these films, where you have these very lovely homes and great dining areas. And then outside, of course, just a few miles of the big cities, you have these gruesome crimes.
And when it was first shown on SBS, this was a niche audience. And the conversation about the killing really didn't start to happen until after it broke through on BBC 4 in the UK. And it was when it was found in the UK and the audience there got very excited about it, that people in Australia who hadn't already come to it, found it on SBS, watched the second series. And you can see the audience numbers increasing each season.
In a paranoid world, everyone is a suspect. Sarah Lund returns in the BAFTA award-winning crime drama, The Killing 2. Coming soon to BBC 4.
The success of The Killing on BBC 4 had as much to do with its cost as it did with its quality.
How on earth could it be that the Danish drama series started travelling? We tried to answer this question by asking the producers in Denmark, the buyers in the UK and elsewhere. We've been looking at 8 different markets. Was it the high quality? So, of course, that's part of it. But what they said in the UK, that it was quite accidental. At that time, when BBC started buying the Danish drama series, The Killing, the crime series, they said they'd been buying American content. It was quite expensive, but then we're looking for something else. And then suddenly they watched this TV series and said, looks quite good. Let's buy that one. This was the starting of The Killing going abroad. It was not produced with ambition to sell it internationally. And in the beginning, the series was also quite cheap. So it was about price. How popular were they? You can see it's niche markets. It's not the majority. So we have to keep that in mind. It's BBC 4, it's smaller channels, but it's a very well-educated segment. Echo starters
crossing. The Killing was quickly followed by a string of other popular series, all produced by DR.
After the first season, there was then the first season of The Bridge. And The Bridge became the compelling next moment in that story. And those two side by side are what all the commentators subsequently have regarded as the moment when what has now come to be called Nordic Noir became Nordic Noir.
Very often you have transgressive characters in these shows, characters with a lot of depth. And this is, of course, important because if you have a film, you have 90 or 120 minutes to develop a lot of characters. Usually you stick to one or two, and then all the others are more stereotypes. Here with these shows, you have 300, 600 minutes to develop characters. And that means you have not one or two, but you have maybe 10. And then you have a lot of time to deal with the psychological depth or some of the problems that you find with the leading detectives, their lives. They have always a private life. If we think about Brøn, The Bridge, for example, it's also the interplay of a Danish cop and a Swedish cop, of course. And they're very different characters. And because you have all that time, you can deal with these cultural differences, but also the different characters in more detail. And that is part of, I think, the fun to watch these shows.
When the production companies and the broadcasters experienced this growing interest for the content, in particular the crime series, but also other kind of series. For instance, the political drama Borgen, The Legacy, which is a family drama. So there were a lot of series that came out just after the killing who also got the same kind of interest. They could almost sell anything made by DR at that time.
I guess what's intriguing about this is when one thinks about television crime drama or crime fiction, the crimes that are actually committed are usually human crimes. You know, they're jealousy, they're rage, they're anger, they're this, they're that. But it's the social context which is of particular interest. And this is why these shows can travel, because everybody understands the human crime at its core. But what we're much more interested in is the political context. And the show that's often quoted in this regard, which is often associated with Nordic noir, although it wasn't a crime show, is of course Borgen. Borgen is a political drama about a woman who inadvertently becomes the prime minister. And what that show again did was show us a very different political scenario. One understood the challenges faced by this woman in trying to hold on to power, to deal with all her colleagues scheming against her, etc., etc.
I think it's less about Danish politics as it is about integrity, it is about politicians, it is about how power corrupts even the best of us, how successful politicians, if we think about Brigitte Nyborg, how they struggle to have a good family life and be there for their partners, for their children, for their friends, but at the same time, giving the best for the country. And I think this really helped many people to understand politics in a different way. So it was less about Denmark and it was more generally about democracy and integrity. And thereby, I think it could be told internationally. But I think even at DR, no one would have thought that this show actually travels to more than 100 countries around the world. I think that was impossible.
And then there would be that really interesting sociological dimension where suddenly you realize that Greenland still belongs to Denmark. And she's trying to deal with the First Nations people in Greenland who need more support and more assistance. So the geopolitics of these series then becomes fascinating and a form of really education for those of us who don't know the intricacies of these societies, but recognize the problems as ones that we also have.
While the success of these programs was measured by the number of viewers, they were also judged by another criteria: how they generated debate in the national newspapers.
Interestingly, the shows in Denmark were measured by the people who actually watched them. So very often they had more than 50% market share at their home country, which is remarkable. That's like a Super Bowl and a final of the World Cup and Eurovision Song Contest combined in some countries. What they also looked at, and this I found quite interesting, and this is also linked to the public service remit, is the spin-off discussion that the shows raise. So for them, a measure to success of the shows was how many newspapers pick up on the topics that we put in to individual episodes and then make a bigger story out of that. So for example, Borgen, integrity in politics. So can we have a closer look at the life of politicians and do we actually give them enough privacy so that they can also have a decent private life, or don't we do that? So they think this is also a measurement. It's not international sales per se. It's prices, of course, at festivals. And they came first as a first indication of success. Of course, how many people actually tune in on a Sunday evening, 8 o'clock time slot for Danish drama, which was very special. And then how many follow-up communication do you find in the broadsheets and the newspapers of the country? And all four indicated, yes, that they found a success story, but they were also overwhelmed by it, but also very happy because all their success stories gave them more money to produce new shows and another one, and also be very kind of risky in their choices. Some of the shows were quite risky, I think. Herrensweihe is one of them, the story of a family of priests. Again, who wants to watch that? But the show does it in a very interesting way.
How did Denmark, a tiny nation, technically create this series? Where did the writers, producers, camera people, etc. come from?
They invested a lot of money in the education of audiovisual personnel. One concept that they are following is flexicurity. So they employ people for one show, and then with almost no exception, usually the shows end after the second season. They're killed off. They say, well, we don't want to milk the cow till it's dying. So we want to, well, have two very successful seasons or even one. And then we have a new production with a completely new team. And therefore, new people get a chance to produce and to write and to direct and to film a television show at international scale, and therefore gain the experience that's needed to move on from there. So what they have, security, because for the two seasons you're employed throughout all production processes. But then at the same time, once that's done, a new project is evolving with new people that have a chance to gain a foothold within the industry. That's very different from Germany, where people work 40 years on one show or 25, and a new talent never has a chance to break into that market. And there are very few exceptions to that rule. Borgen was finished after two seasons and then for a long time finished. And then, yeah, they produced the third, but only after years. Another exception is Braun, The Bridge. They couldn't get out of a contract they had with a private film company that was co-producing it. And that also helped them never to sign a similar contract in the future. So Pew Bernd really said that was a mistake. And she said, well, Braun is a great show, but people lost interest in the third season, and that has a detrimental effect on public service broadcaster audience relationships. So we would never do that ever again. And if you look at all the other shows, usually, yeah, one season, two seasons, new team comes in, new team gains experience, and then after you work with those international shows, of course, you can work also internationally very well.
One of the most surprising results of the success of the Danish TV industry has been tourism. And earlier this year, that tourist was me. Like many Nordic crime tourists before me, I rode the train over the Øresund Bridge between Copenhagen in Denmark and Malmö in Sweden, where the body was found in the first season of The Bridge. Never said it was good, never said it was
muted whispers. People have always read crime fiction set somewhere else. Donna Leon, famous crime writer, her books are set in Venice, and they're incredibly popular. So there is a way in which crime fiction has long satisfied a form of armchair tourism. And I think that is exactly what the television crime drama does. And even though it looks so gloomy and dark, apparently, after one of the seasons of The Bridge, the tourism numbers to Copenhagen and to Malmö actually went up exponentially. And some friends of mine were doing some research, and they had people commenting, I came here because of the Øresund Bridge. I came to see it for myself. I love Sagan Oren, I loved The Bridge, I had to come. Certainly the Nordic Noir series have inspired that kind of cultural tourism.
Many people in Denmark we spoke to are very proud of their public service broadcasting system, because they say our public service broadcasting system produces shows that have depth, that talk about our problems and that are entertaining. We're not lectured at. We have the opportunity with these shows to think about the topics ourselves. It's not all spelled out for us. And also, none of these shows creates hero narratives of the individual because he or she is so brilliant to conquer everything in the world. Here, it's more bleak society as it is. And many Danes, yeah, really are proud that this is the way that public service broadcasting changed its face.
The success of the Danish crime series was recognised by its neighbours, and today crime series are being produced across Scandinavia.
It's almost like a family tree. And I kind of like drawing this, which is, you know, you've got the killing, you've got the bridge, you've got these branches going up, and then you can see all these offshoots in different countries as people adapt and assimilate and create their own version of what a Nordic noir would look like.
First, I think in Norway, and then, of course, in Sweden as well, you can find a lot of shows. I think one of the most interesting shows, let's take Norwegian television, Nobel, was on Netflix, and Occupied, I think, is the most interesting show about Russian aggression in the Ukraine. Before there was an invasion, they produced a show where Russia occupies parts of Norway.
Where's it going? It's everywhere. Because we're not in Europe, we don't get to see how many of the shows are actually being made across Europe more broadly. Colleagues that I have that are part of that television network would be able to point to Hungary, Czechoslovakia, to point to the way in which TV crime drama across that northern area is emulating the Nordic noir aesthetic. Though I'm prepared to say that it's probably fading and turning into something else. Don't ask me what it is, because if I knew that, I'd make a lot of money. But it will inevitably transition into something else. There'll be a new wave of crime drama that does something else. In the same way that, for example, in the year 2001, the most popular television crime show in the world was CSI, and everyone was interested in forensics. Then you get the killing in 2010, 11, and the bridge. And now we're coming to the end of that Nordic noir wave, waiting for the next thing. Will it be comedy crime? I don't know. But it will change.
Just finally, what are the shows that you think are by far the best? And if you want to understand this particular genre, that you really should watch?
Definitely the first season of The Killing. Definitely the first season of The Bridge. I would also say definitely Trapped from Iceland. Then I would watch a show called Thin Ice, which is set in Greenland and which has strong central female characters and addresses the issue of what happens when oil is found under the Greenland shelf, what happens when America and Russia are competing to get control. The other one that I think was a memorable series that did something that helped Mystery Road find its feet was the show Midnight Sun. Midnight Sun is a Swedish-French co-production shot in the northern lands of Finland where the Sami people, the reindeer herders and the people who live in that region are being dispossessed. They're being dispossessed by climate change. They're being dispossessed because of the oil companies. And that particular show, I think, set the way in which a global audience would appreciate a series like Mystery Road, which also dealt with indigenous people, dispossession, politics, climate change, etc. So those would be my top few to start with, I think.
Susan Turnbull from the University of Wollongong with her tips for summer viewing. My other guests, German academic Tobias Hofschaff and Anne-Marit Wade, author of Danish television drama, Global Lessons from a Small Nation. The sound engineer is Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. I'm Annabelle Quince, and this is Rear Vision.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.